proceed to the next case. United States versus Desmond Christian. Mr. Brodnick.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, I am here today on behalf of the appellant and the defendant, Desmond Christian. As the court is aware, my client was convicted of a deprivation of rights under color of law. That statute is 18 U.S.C. section 242, which provides that that offense can be both a felony and a misdemeanor. The only distinguishing element between those two offenses, whether it's a felony or a misdemeanor, is the existence or non-existence of bodily injury. We are arguing, Your Honor, that as a result of a couple of plea agreements that were entered into with co-defendants, that both judicial estoppel and fundamental fairness under the Due Process Clause required the government to be estopped from presenting evidence of bodily injury. Under judicial estoppel principles, there are three things that are required. One is that the same set of facts are in question. We certainly have that here. There was one alleged attack on one victim by three officers. The second element is that the party arguing, or the party must have convinced the court to accept its position. Again, we do not believe there is any question with regard to that issue. The government entered into plea agreements with co-defendants Hahn and Smith for misdemeanor convictions, misdemeanor offenses under
that. Just prosecutorial discretion? I'm not sure I follow the logic of your position.
Your Honor, we certainly don't argue that the prosecution has wide discretion with regard to entering into plea agreements. However, that is not unlimited.
Prosecutors always make deals for reduced charges or reduced sentences in exchange for testimony. I mean, we're all, I'm often stunned, you know.
I agree, Your Honor, and we're not arguing for a broad sweeping ruling that would limit prosecutorial discretion. If they want to dismiss charges, if they want to indicate that we're going to dismiss three charges in exchange for a plea to one, that a quantity of drugs may have been different, that an individual may be responsible for a lesser quantity, that's fine. But what we have in this case is an actual admission by the government, we believe, that bodily injury did not exist. And the reason we argue that is they signed a plea agreement that said all relevant conduct is accounted for in this plea agreement.
Well, both of the plea agreements state that Kale suffered a bloody lip and pain as a result of the beating.
That's true, Your Honor. And what that shows, we believe, is that the government cannot have it both ways. They cannot indicate in the factual section that he suffered a bloody lip, which is bodily injury, and then enter into a stipulated plea agreement where they're only guilty of misdemeanors. They can't have it both ways. They can't play fast and loose with those rules.
I really have a problem in understanding in what way the plea agreement is inconsistent with the government's position in Christian's trial. In other words, both plea agreements talk about this bloody lip and pain.
Your Honor, the plea agreements also advise the court that the plea agreements are appropriate because all relevant conduct is considered. Relevant conduct is defined under the statute as conduct that was aided and abetted, or conduct or harm that results from jointly undertaken activity. The government admits in its brief that the co-defendants, Hahn and Smith, held the victim while my client allegedly did the beating. Now, how can that conduct not be aiding and abetting or harm resulting from jointly undertaken criminal activity? Therefore, we believe the government in these stipulations has said since the relevant conduct has been taken into account, there could not have been bodily injury with regard to the victim, and therefore they should be estopped from arguing that bodily injury occurred with regard to my client. That results in that same argument, Your Honors, we believe is relevant to whether or not this is at least an admission on the part of the government in these plea agreements. There was extensive cross-examination of both Hahn and Smith at trial with regard to the misdemeanor felony aspects of the plea agreements and the bodily injury, non-bodily injury, the aspects of the plea agreement. Therefore, that evidence came into court. And an admission is a statement by a party opponent and offered by the other party. That is what we have in that case. We asked it, at least to be able to argue that issue to the jury, and we were denied that opportunity to do so. The simple fact of the matter is there was a lot of evidence that I don't think the government disputes that would indicate there were other alternative ways for this victim to have been injured, to have suffered bodily injury. He was in a bar fight. He was tackled by officers at the scene in the parking lot, and he repeatedly hit his head on the plexiglass sheeting in the police car when he was being transported to the jail. He was so disruptive at that time that the officer stopped the car and maced him. So there were a lot of alternatives as to how this injury could have resulted. There was a lesser included offense instruction that was given to the jury with regard to whether or not bodily injury existed. The argument on that point to the jury would have been particularly important, and we believe it was an abuse of discretion for us to be denied that argument.
Well, the other two were, did you say Hahn and Smith? Were those the other two?
Hahn and Smith.
Did they testify?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Did they talk about injury or?
We questioned them. Yes, they did talk about injury. Absolutely, they talked about what happened at the scene of the incident, and we questioned them extensively with regard to the plea agreements on the misdemeanor, on the bodily injury aspects of those, that they were getting a deal from the government, and we should have at least been able to argue that fact to the jury.
Did any other eyewitnesses testify?
There were several officers from the Howard County Correctional facility that testified. Yeah. Finally, we offered to introduce expert testimony with regard to the injuries that were suffered in this case. Dr. Pless, our expert, would have testified that there are three types of injuries: mild, moderate, and severe. He also would have testified that mild injuries only affect the skin, and that his testimony in this case would have been that these injuries were mild with some moderate types because of swelling with regard to the elapse of time. The court denied us the opportunity to introduce that testimony because the court said the issue is whether or not there's bodily injury, and Dr. Pless even agrees that there's bodily injury, so it's irrelevant. However, that's not why we wanted that testimony. There were two instructions that the court gave. Instruction number 9, whether or not force is lawful for the jury to decide, the court can consider the extent of the injury. In deciding an element of the crime, the court instructed the jury they can consider the extent of the injury. It gave another instruction. To determine the specific intent of my client, the jury could consider the degree of the injury. So that evidence of Dr. Pless is very important with regard to the mild nature of the injuries that were suffered. Again, we have three alternatives or three other places that injuries could have been suffered by this victim. One is at the bar in the bar fight. Two is at the scene where he was arrested in the parking lot at the bar, where he was tackled. There was evidence he hit his face on a car, hit his face on the pavement of the parking lot. Three is during transport when he's hitting his face on the shield. Again, that evidence then, the jury could have considered that despite all of those places that he could have suffered these injuries, that he still suffered mild injuries. And we believe the jury would have been perfectly appropriate in considering that the degree of force used and the extent of the injury could have led the jury to a conclusion that my client was not guilty of the felonious deprivation under color of law. I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay. Ms. Stark?
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Lisa Stark, and I represent the United States Appellee in this case. Addressing the two issues that have been raised here this morning, the first, case law, the record, and logic all establish that the co-defendant's pleas to a lesser-included misdemeanor charge did not bar the government from prosecuting defendant for or proving that he committed a felony violation. Case law unequivocally establishes that a plea agreement to a lesser offense is not a finding, is not an admission, and has no evidentiary value regarding the charged offense. Defendant does not cite a single case in which a court has held that a co-defendant's plea agreement impacts what the government can charge or prove with regard to another defendant. Moreover, the government, in allowing the co-defendants to plead guilty, did not admit, let alone that the co-defendant's conduct, let alone defendant's conduct here, did not constitute a felony. Contrary to co-defendant's counsel's or defendant's counsel's submission here, the plea specified that the victim suffered injury, a bloody lip, and pain. Thus, there is nothing inconsistent with regard to the co-defendant's pleas and the government's convicting defendant of a felonious violation. Finally, to hold otherwise in this case would bring the criminal justice system to a grinding halt with regard to co-defendant's cases. I don't think I have to inform this court how often the government offers pleas for lesser offenses to co-defendants who are less culpable than the primary defendant, and that's precisely what happened here. Thus, it was proper for the government to convict defendant of the felonious violation. Counsel also argues this morning that the trial court abused its discretion when it refused to allow a medical expert to characterize the severity of the victim's injuries. The court did not err and certainly did not abuse its discretion in excluding this testimony, and that exclusion did not amount to reversible error. The extent of injury was irrelevant to any element of the crime. First, to the extent that defendant claims that it's relevant to whether or not bodily injury occurred, it clearly is not.
But jury instructions 9 and 11, one refers to the extent of injury suffered and the other to the degree of force used.
That is correct. And it could be relevant in certain situations. It is not in this case, and it is not according to the evidence. And that's because here the defendant claimed that, in fact, he used no force at all, and that the victim here suffered injuries prior to his arriving at the jail. Thus, the extent of injuries that the victim suffered have no relationship to whether or not the defendant used reasonable force. Second, even if the defendant had made that claim that the injuries occurred at the jail, the uncontradicted testimony was that no amount of force was permissible to be used at the jail, because although the victim was verbally aggressive at the jail and yelling, he was not physically aggressive in any way, and thus the uncontradicted testimony was that no amount of force was permissible. Here, thirdly, the defendant not only used force, but used force that his own fellow officers indicated could only be permissible if, in fact, they were in some danger, because in fact the defendant administered repeatedly blows to the head with his fist and his knee. And thus, the testimony regarding the extent of the injury could not possibly be relevant in this case. Even if it had been relevant, however, the court properly excluded the testimony because, in fact, because of the nature of the injuries, a bloody lip, bruising to the face, there was no need for the expert testimony characterizing the nature of the injury. It was fully comprehensible to the jury. Furthermore, the jury saw photographs of the injury, which is the best evidence of what the injury could be. And finally, the expert's testimony could not have affected the outcome of the case and wasn't even particularly favorable to the defendant, because the jury, in looking at the photographs, could have easily thought the injuries were minor, and the defense expert wanted to say they were minor with moderate features. Thus, we submit to this court that the trial court below did not abuse its discretion in excluding that portion of the expert's testimony because it was totally irrelevant to the case, to no element that the jury had to find. The court properly excluded it because the testimony wasn't relevant, because the jury didn't need the assistance. But finally, even if somehow the court abused its discretion, that in fact it could not possibly have affected the outcome of the case. On the remaining issue, we will submit on what's in our brief, and we would ask this court to affirm the judgment below. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Rodney?
Yes, Your Honor, very briefly.
I want to address one statement counsel made with regard to that there was no need or no reason for my client to go over to the victim in this case. The testimony was not uncontradicted that there was no need for force to be applied to this victim. In fact, the testimony was ample, and we've cited it in our brief, that where this comes from is that the victim was ordered to sit at some chairs, and he continually stood up and sat down and stood up and sat down, and at one point tried to get around the jailer that was in control of him. That testimony, we believe, is uncontradicted, that he refused to obey the jailer to sit down. He kept getting up, sitting down, getting up, sitting down, and then tried to move around the jailer. So there was an explanation for my client to go over and try to subdue that individual. The simple fact of the matter is, we did argue that my client did not use excessive force. There is no question about that, and that he did not knee and punch this individual. And I apologize, my time is up.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much. I understand you were court appointed, is that right?
Yes.
Well, we appreciate you for taking the appointment and doing a fine job for your client. Move on to the last.